Good morning from KLCK, your talk of Clickerton County. And I'm Kevin Malcolm, live with you this morning. And we're all getting all set up because we're going to be talking with our 14th District Senator, Curtis King. And, sir, welcome to our program.
Well, good morning, and thanks for giving me this opportunity.
Just in short, how are things going? Has it been nuts, or is it kind of slowing down a little bit?
Well, it's slowing down a little bit now. We just last week had our cutoff to move Senate bills out of the Senate and send mm-hmm. them over to the House. That's always an interesting time about the bills that made it and those that didn't. But usually it ramps down a little bit, and now we're starting to hear the bills from the House that came over to our committees. And, you know, that usually takes a week or so to get cranked up and get through that part of the legislative session. So, but it's going well. I think the other side of the aisle is making a concerted effort to try and where they can work bipartisanly and at least we're having better conversations than we've had the last 2 years, because it was difficult to have those conversations because of the COVID and doing everything mm-hmm. by Zoom. So,
and do you think the various committees are coming together more than they have been?
Well, it feels that way, yeah. I mean, we got a ways, from our standpoint, we got a ways to go, but in the committees that I serve on, the two chairs are very amenable to having conversations about various bills or various ideas. My feeling is that they are listening, at least in the Senate, and at least giving our thoughts or our wishes some play. So I think it's been a pretty good session so far. We'll see what happens in these last 6 weeks. So,
any specific bills of your own that you like to talk about that are dear to you?
Oh, I have a homeless encampment bill that didn't make it out of committee. I'm looking to see if there isn't somewhere that I could possibly attach it to another bill. But it basically said that, you know, a city or a town or a county could not place or a homeless encampment within 1,000 feet of a school or a daycare, mm-hmm. And they couldn't just let it happen. You know, whether it was solicited or unsolicited, there was a reverend of some kind that came and testified against it, that said, well, his church wouldn't be able to have the homeless program they have if that was the case. I'm checking to see whether that gentleman is truly a pastor or not, but mm-hmm. that seemed to be the thing that killed it more than anything else. But we're willing to work on it. We're willing to make some changes if we need to. But why would you put a homeless encampment within right next to a school? I mean, it makes no sense to me.
And really, what does it have to do with the church reaching out and helping people anyway?
Not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
I look at, they call it the canal. They refer to it as something canal, mm-hmm. but it's a homeless encampment under I-5, and in Seattle. It's huge.
Right.
It's within 500 feet of the John Stanton School, and these kids go by, drive by, and it's just a pit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is the things that go on in there, and it's just mind-boggling that we would even think of allowing those kinds of things to happen that would put these kids in danger, in my opinion. I would tell you a story. My LA came in last week, and she said, this was last a week ago, she said she went to, and I don't remember the name of the store, but she went to a store in, not Tumwater, but in Lacey,
mm-hmm.
And she said as she drove into the parking lot, here's a homeless encampment along a ridge between the building and I think I-5. And here's a guy laying out in the open, just laying there, not moving. She didn't know whether he was dead or whatever. And she parked and went into the store.
Oh.
And when she got into the store, here was a mother talking to her daughter. And her daughter was crying. And she overheard the daughter say, or the mother say to the daughter, "Don't worry, honey. He was just sleeping. He wasn't dead."
Oh.
But the little girl is traumatized. She's crying because she sees this body laying out there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these are what we're subjecting our kids to. It's like, this makes absolutely no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And when you drive by the filth and the garbage that is strewn everywhere in these encampments, why are we putting up with this?
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense.
Even on the east side, in Toppenish, I know a religious organization that I'm affiliated with, and they were chased out of their building because it was so bad they couldn't meet. It was unsafe to meet. They broke in. They broke, you know, they actually demolished the place. So, I mean, it's happening everywhere, and it just seems like they have more rights than the common folks in our state.
Well, they do. I mean, it's unbelievable what they get away with.
Exactly.
It is just to the point where they say, well, we got to have housing. We got to have housing. So I think one of the cities around here bought a motel. They bought two of them, actually.
Okay.
And they moved these homeless people. They burned both of them to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Others, you listen to what's happening in California, they've done the same thing. They bought these hotels. They moved the homeless into them. There is so much fentanyl. I mean, they just turn it into a place to produce fentanyl. And when they do move them out of there, the place is so full of all of the things that fentanyl can do that they have to just rebuild the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is and they just let them do it. I mean, it's like, oh, we got to have housing. We got to have housing. Well, you put them in housing and they just destroy it. I mean, if they don't just physically destroy it, they produce fentanyl and all these other drugs, and it leaves such a mark on it. You can't go into the place without wearing a hazmat suit. I mean, we got bus drivers. These people get on a bus and they heat up their fentanyl while they're riding the bus because it's warm in there. And then the fumes go everywhere, and drivers have had to pull off to the side of the road and get outside and get fresh air just to keep their, sanity.
I've heard that complaint. I've heard that complaint. That is terrible.
I mean, and what do we do to them?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. There's no consequences. And, you know, the question is, where do they get all this stuff?
So you're hoping to attach that to...
So
you're hoping to attach that to another bill then, maybe?
Well, we're hoping that we can at least do something to protect these schools. That's the idea.
I gotcha.
We'll see how lucky we are, but we're going to try every means we can. The governor came out and said, well, we can't allow these schools or these homeless encampments to be within 1,000 miles of school, or 1,000, excuse me, I wish it was 1,000 miles, 1,000 feet of a school. And so I had dropped this bill about 3 or 4 years ago. It got to this, they took it and attached it to another bill on the Senate floor, which I think we passed over to the House, but it never made it out of the House. And so when the governor came out this year and made that statement, I dropped my bill again. And of course it didn't make it out of committee because, you know, they didn't want to hold people accountable for anything.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and I appreciate what you're saying there, and I hope something can be done, because look at the lessons we're teaching young people if we let these things continue.
What we're teaching our young people just by the things that we're allowing is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can be stopped with fentanyl and oxycodone and cocaine in your pocket, mm-hmm. and all you got to say is, "Well, I didn't know that was there." Mm-hmm. And the only thing the police can do is say, we have a program to help you get off of these drugs. Are you interested in signing up?"
Yeah, and that's what
they walk away.
And that's what local police are facing. They know they're driving recklessly. Yeah. They know they're high on drugs. But all they can do is say, "Well, get yourself fixed, give your card, and here's what you can do."
And they can't pursue them. The gentleman that drove the wrong way around Grandview and killed those two young kids, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
I mean, they went after him in Thorpe when he drove by him at 100 and some miles an hour, but they couldn't pursue him because it was just speeding.
Okay.
And, I mean, and so here we are. And this is what the law says. This is what the legislature passed last year. So we had a bill on pursuit that didn't do a lot, but the chair of the committee wouldn't even let the bill out of committee.
Hmm.
And so on the last day before the cutoff to hear Senate bills on the floor and vote them off the floor, the Democrats brought forth, they went to what's called the Ninth Order. They pulled the bill out of committee and brought it directly to the floor. And we had a long debate. We tried to add amendments which allowed for more pursuits, more reasons for pursuits, like a stolen car. You can't pursue. If you know it's a stolen car, you can't pursue it.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's like, how stupid are we? And that's why you've seen us spiking. But anyway, we had a long debate on the floor, and this shows you how it works. So the chair that wouldn't let it out of committee in the final vote voted for it.
Huh.
Because it was her bill a year or two ago that stopped these pursuits.
Hmm.
And so she's trying to save face, by voting for the bill. I mean, this is where how ridiculous we are sometimes. But anyway.
Do you have any good things that you think have passed the Senate that you'd like to talk about?
Oh, you're going to make me think. I'm so focused on all the
others. No, I understand. I really do.
There have been some good things, but now you're making me change my
thinking. No, go ahead. Let's continue on here
Well, that's fine. I mean, there have been a lot of good things. Things that help an industry or opens up markets for them. A lot of them are related to alcohol or those types of things. We passed a bill that when COVID was rampant, we passed a bill that allowed restaurants to deliver meals and cocktails to a home.
Okay.
And so one of the bills that we passed this year allowed restaurants to continue to do that. The difference was because apparently we've had some problems with one of the TNCs, the Ubers, the Lyfts, DoorDash.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They weren't getting the signatures that needed to be there, and so the bill was changed that it had to be a employee of the restaurant that would do the delivery, and they had to be trained, but we're allowing that. I think that's a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see any real negative outcomes over the 2 years with that happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I take that as kind of a positive statement. We had a good bill, I believe, in transportation. That when you looked at the data that we had on young people and driver's license and training, we found that there were a lot of younger people who were waiting until they were 18 to get their driver's license.
Okay.
And the main reason is that you don't have to go through a driver training course. You just go down and take the test once you turn 18. And if you can pass the test, written and other, you get your driver's license. Well, we're finding out that those that have not gone through this formal training are having a higher percentage of accidents, substantially higher percentage of accidents, from 18 to 25. And I was amazed that it went to 25, so I asked the question, well, what's the how many are accidents are there with these individuals from 18 to 21 and then from 22 to 25? I thought there would be a substantial difference. There was a difference, and it was slightly less, but it was not substantially less.
Okay.
So we passed a bill that said, if you're 18 to 21, you got to take the full course. You have to have so many hours of actual driving, and then you can take the test and pass it. 21 or 22 to 25, it's a lesser course, but a smaller number of hours of actual driving with an instructor. We put some money in to help low income so that they could pay for some of these courses because they're rather expensive.
Okay.
We're looking at trying to see what we can do to have the schools start back up in teaching driver training. So I thought that was a good bill. It was a bipartisan bill.
Passed, okay, good.
I don't know if it was unanimously or not, but it had a very good percentage to get out of the Senate. So we're doing some good things over here. It isn't all negative, and like I say, we seem to be working better together, at least in the committees that I'm in. But I think that's true across the legislature. So.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk, getting back to this, the pursuits again, there's been a lot of talk about House Bill 1333. Are the ones that are done on the Senate side, are they very similar as far as what was proposed to the full Senate?
Well, I'm not familiar with what 1333 is, but it was supposed to, what was it, you know?
Yeah, I had to do basically on restrictions for the police as far as vehicle pursuits. It was very similar, but I think it probably brought up some different things.
Well, it could have. I'm not on committees that would handle that bill, but...
House Bill 1333 had to do with people who are put in a category because they maybe might speak up at a meeting, or they might say, you know, we don't like this, and in some cases they might be kind of branded as being extremists. That's what that's all about.
Oh, well, I have not. I don't think we had anything of that nature.
Sure, sure.
In the Senate, so I'm going to have to check that out and see. But you know, we have a right of free speech in this country,
right.
And it's always interesting to me that there are always those that say, "Well, I want to say my piece," but yet when they have somebody on the other side of the issue that wants to say theirs, they don't want to let them do it. You know, I think you got to listen to both sides of an argument, whether you like it or not. It'll be interesting to see what happens when it gets over here.
So. Yeah. All right. Any other bills you'd like to talk about while we got just a moment or so left?
Oh, I think we're going to see some bills on housing and maybe some money going to these housing programs. I have some concern about that because it's just putting these people in housing isn't going to solve the problem. We have to do something about their mental illness, their addiction to drugs and alcohol. I mean, we got to address all of those things. Just putting them in a house isn't going to solve the problem.
I know.
I have one other little bill that you got me thinking here.
Okay.
I had a bill that had to do with. Helping Toppenish Hospital.
Okay.
And what the bill did, it allowed them to collect 120% on inpatient work for those on Medicaid, I think it is, and 200% on outpatient, just to try and keep that hospital solvent. It passed the Senate, I think, unanimously, and so we're now going to go over and work it in the House and see if we can get out of the Senate. I was very pleased with that bill. It was my bill try and salvage, keep that hospital open. I know what it means to the Lower Valley and to the tribes and to our Hispanic community, and it's a great little hospital. They do a lot of fine things, but they're struggling because of their high Medicaid rate. So, anyway.
And there's no doubt about it.
I'm hoping we'll get.
There's no doubt about it. The smaller hospitals are really suffering because, I mean, from a patient expects them to have all the services of a big city hospital, but yet they don't have the funding they need to keep going sometimes.
Right. Well, I know that the Medicare Medicaid payments are way too low.
Okay.
And so this is going to help them. I think help them substantially, help keep their doors open. And we're going to continue on to see what we can do with all of the other hospitals in the area. So.
Okay. All right. Are any transportation ones you'd like to talk about?
Oh, I don't have any bills in particular. We're working diligently on transportation and the budget. Money is always tight in transportation. I don't know why that is, but the price of everything is going up, and yet our gas tax is not going up, and in fact we're pushing electric cars, so at the very best our gas tax is staying even. As far as what we're taking in. So we have a challenge, and how do we address that? How do we keep the projects that we promised in the Connecting Washington package that we passed in 2017? How do we keep them moving and being able to pay for them and those types of things? So we're working diligently together to try and figure out how do we solve that problem and keep these projects moving that are so important to many of the areas around our state. So.
Here in the Gorge, I know the Dalles Bridge crossing over at Highway 197 is almost done. They expect to have that done, I think, in April, because it's still kind of bumpy and everything. But
Yes.
But the Hood River Bridge, what's the timetable on that particular project?
Well, I'm hoping... My goal is that we would have that bridge built by 2028.
Okay.
Which still seems to me like a long ways out.
But, yeah, it does.
We were able to get $75 million put into the budget last year into one of the packages that was passed. The governor moved it way out to 2030 something, and we're doing our best to try and move it back in so that it's relevant. I mean, you can't have a bridge built if you don't have the money until 2033.
Right.
So anyway, we're working on that. I think I have support from the other side of the aisle as well. My chair understands what it means. I know the Oregon Senate has a bill before them or a proposal to fund $125 million, and we're working really hard with the federal delegations to try and find some additional monies there. It's about a $500, $550 million bridge. We're working on setting up a bi-state bridge authority to operate and run the bridge and get it built. So we just got to stay on it. We're working hard, and both the Oregon side and the Washington side are working really well together. We just got to make sure we put this package together and do it soon so that we know we can finish the design and we can start construction. These things take forever, and there's absolutely no reason why they should. So that's my goal, is to at least get it done by 2028. I'm hoping perhaps we'll get it done before then, but... we'll see how it goes.
Is that a similar package that would be drafted, let's say, to complete a new bridge across I-5 in Portland, Vancouver, the interstate bridge there?
Well, it's very similar in that respect. That bridge has not created a bi-state authority, bridge authority, like the Hood River Bridge did.
Okay.
But we're like I say, that bridge now, the bridge at Vancouver, they're talking about that possibly costing $7.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a lot of money. We're going to need federal help. I'm hoping we can get a couple $100 million for the Hood River Bridge before all of that comes down, and that's my concern. We got to keep the focus on the Hood River Bridge and moving
exactly.
That money forward, and trying to find some money out of the feds. If we could get $100 million, $100 and a quarter, $150 million out of the feds, it would just cement that bridge as it's relevant. We're doing it. Let's get it done, type of a thing. So that's our goal.
It wouldn't be a floating bridge, would it?
No. It will not be a floating bridge. It'll be similar to the bridge that's there. I'm hoping we have less pylons in the water.
Yeah.
We're going to have a bike and ped path on the bridge, those kinds of amenities. But it will still be a tolled bridge. And the tolls will stay on the bridge and be used to help pay for it. And also pay for the maintenance and upkeep as it ages. So,
and because the new bridge is being built alongside the old one can stay in operation until the new one's done.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. So we just got to stay on it and keep pushing, and got a lot of good people working on it, particularly those in the gorge have put in a lot of hours, and I thank them profusely for all their efforts. So.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you and I will talk again. I guess we'll one more time, maybe in April, I suppose. But was there anything?
I hope so. Hope
was there anything you wanted to mention in conclusion?
I don't think so. I think we have an opportunity here to have a pretty good legislative session. We'll see how the rest of we have 6 weeks to go. Just starting the last 6 weeks, and I'm hoping that we can continue some of this bipartisan effort and working together. And we know we're not going to agree on everything, but let's work together where we can. So,
I know your seatmates on the House in the 14th District feel the same way as well.
Exactly.
All right.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Well, Mr. King, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it very much. And we'll talk to you soon, and wish you the best as the session is winding down.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Curtis King here on KLCK.